Round two, take two.
He doesn't do anything?
No, it's a, sorry, Cap.
Any thug can kill. I want you to take your ego out of the equation.
And I don't want any third-rate rent-a-thug who couldn't cut it as a cop in Chicago bringing him to L.A. on some bullshit local charge.
Hippies and yippies alike fill the streets, waging a war of peace against Mayor Daley's thugs.
Mugs, pugs, thugs, nitwits, halfwits, dimwits.
But Bud White is a valuable officer.
White's a mindless thug.
Oh, hell yeah, they got robbers, thugs, drug dealers, right, you name it.
Thug life.
Did you fucking apologize? What's the matter with you?
Listen, thug means never having to say you're sorry.
Things we've always tried to do at Pixar is to look at our world, the world we're familiar with, in an unfamiliar way. With Toy Story, it's your bedroom, but seen from 5 inches above the floor. Bug's Life, it's more like an inch and a half. We're basically trying to present the world that we all know in a way you've never really seen it before.
It won't come just when you want it.
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you.
You see, I'm Irish, but I'm not a leprechaun. You wanna fight, then step up and we'll get it on. You get a right to the grill, I'm white.
Come on, we're almost there. El Vaquero.
I ducked and I swing, next thing your jaw's broken. Punk, I ain't joking, you can bet you bitch.
I can't just sit here and do nothing. That's all I've ever done. That's all anyone in this blasted ship has ever done. Nothing!
These Irish eyes are smiling, I'm upwiling. The house of pain is pumping, start jumping. Freak it, funk it, backseat chunk it. If you can't get with it, you wind up sweating.
She's a Barbie doll, Ken. There's 100 million just like her.
Not to me, there's not.
We got the cake that you're trying to get a crumb off. The Irish styling, the Celtic jazz. No one has it, just us, that's it.
Attention, Axiom shoppers. Try blue. It's the new red.
Your skinhead, I call you a pinhead. Just like the Tin Man, you got no heart. Here comes the good part, I pick up, buck up, cut him up and buck him down. No fucking around, homeboy, you
ain't clown. My master made me his collar, so that I may talk, squirrel.
And by the way, top of the morning to you.
Welcome back to the second part of our Pixar episode. That might be the official break.
Okay.
At the 2-hour point.
Should we reintroduce ourselves?
Finishing Ratatouille, Wally, and Up. I might do that, but let's do it just in case. With me is Vijay. He's an Indian whose parents left India with good sense. And with me as well is Rick from the United States of Geekdom, who is half Cuban and half Mexican.
That's
not
right.
That you'd notice. But and we are 2 hours into recording right now, and this might be a second episode, might not. I am also, since we started recording, this is my 7th beer.
Wow.
DJ knows what this means. I've also had a couple of cocktails before we started recording, so
it's probably good that you don't have small pets.
It really good. Good hope's gone to sleep. Otherwise, they'd just be screaming for me to get another cocktail. Damn it!
Woman, get me another cup of nog.
Although, what's funny about this?
A flagon of nog.
Give me a flagon of nog.
She's pointed out to me, I can't even raise my voice in a grocery store without people looking at her like, do you need help? I'm literally 6'8", 320 pounds. And it's just like, is he terrible to you? If he is, you can tell us, and we'll protect you.
You can drag her around by her hair, but then, you know, you do the old movie trick where she grabs your arm so that, like, you're not actually pulling her by the hair.
No, I don't do that. I don't need special effects.
Okay.
She can deal with it.
Does she put up with a lot of your shit?
No, she doesn't. She hands it right back, and I have to shut up.
Oh, so she's like my wife. Okay, she's like Molly.
Yes, well,
nice.
She knows.
It's
the
only way it would work. Let's put it that way.
She knows that I wouldn't do anything, and that if some other dude were to fucking look at her funny, like, what a bitch, I'd beat him to death against the wall. Like, I wouldn't even hit him, I'd just slam against the wall until there was nothing left.
And there would be plenty
of evidence. Why? Yeah.
Also, he had a knife. See? I was defending myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So let's finish up on Ratatouille. for those who are listening from last week, presumably.
Yes.
I dig Ratatouille because it brings in, like, I love movies that paint, I am big into film. Mm-hmm. Enough so that I came up with this idea.
No, you have a podcast about it and everything.
Yeah, Clarkson, let's do this. I love taking joy in those little things. You know, like going to see Butch and Sundance in a theater, and when he says, the fall would probably kill us. And just dying, because it's perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole, like, no. Don't just take a bite of this. Take a minute to understand what you're eating and enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
I love the passion in that. Because is there anything other than food that has that level of, no, just enjoy this? There isn't.
The attention to detail in this movie is incredible too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see the you see the tarnish on the pots, the way the food is animated.
Yeah.
I mean, the burns. The pantry.
Oh, yeah.
The burns and calluses on the hands of the chefs.
Have you ever read? Are you a fan of? Are either of you guys into Tony Bourdain?
Seen a few episodes.
Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations is one of the best shows on TV. His book, Kitchen Confidential, he talks about working in a kitchen, his first job, and like having to grab something out of the oven and it being kind of burning on his hand. Going, oh, can I get a towel for that? And this old grizzled line cook looks at him, reaches in and grabs the handle of this pan that's in the oven, takes it out and sets it down like it's nothing.
Yeah.
And he said, I looked down at just the burns and calluses on his hand and I said, I want that. I want to be that guy. And it's like, that's what they capture. And he puts forth that the last vestige of pirates in this world, other than Somalia, is in the kitchens. If you knew who was cooking your food, you would not eat in a restaurant.
Oh, so true.
It's this group of just dirty fucking pirates. And they capture that so well in a nice way. It's like, oh, this guy used to do this and then that and blah, blah. And that guy, his story always changes. We think he was in jail, but we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, people who work in kitchens by choice go to work when everyone else is at play.
Yeah.
When everyone else is, oh, I'm going to be off doing this. Like, no, that's when we go to work. It's this totally different mindset of just insanity. But it's beautiful at the same time. Because there's this exacting pride that's taken in it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when you go to a restaurant where the cooks give a shit, oh, man. Oh, it's so good.
There's a there's a restaurant in Disney World called, it's Victoria and Roberts or something, like Albert and Victoria's.
Victoria and Albert?
Thank
yeah,
you.
That, yeah, yeah. That would make sense, yeah.
Victoria and Albert's, and they do this cooking right in front of you.
And oh, God.
The amount of love and the amount of pride that this guy does. Uh-huh. It's a five-course meal. It's 150 per person. No kids,
wow.
No kids allowed, but it's a five-course fucking meal. It takes
I would imagine that's
through.
Awesome.
So I'm thinking when I go to Disney World later on next year, I'll be we'll be finding a way to ditch the kid for a little while and take the wife out for a nice dinner,
I think. It's like in Austin. VJ, have you ever been to One in a Million?
No, I haven't.
Dude, we got to go sometime. One in a Million is this little hole-in-the-wall Mexican place that has this amazing...
A hole-in-the-wall before maybe Man vs. Food.
Man vs. Food, yeah. But it was really well-known in town. And if you've seen the Man vs. Food, it's this immense taco that see how many you can eat. But it's amazing, even if you eat just one, and there's care that goes into it.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because an old roommate of mine, she's Mexican, and she was like, you know what, real Mexican people don't eat there. It's disgusting. But I don't believe her because it looks good.
It's good. Yeah, well, like, have you ever eaten a burger at Casino El Camino?
No. I've only been that one time with you before the Pogues concert.
Yeah, you got to go sometime because it's those places, like, to me, I don't want to go. When I go to a town, I don't want to go to the flashy, nice place. I want to go to the little hole in the wall.
Yeah, no doubt.
That has that, like... If I go to Fort Worth, we're going to Old South and I'm having a German pancake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, period. Which, oh, God, VJ, you got to try. I will make you what's called a Dutch baby in most other places. Mm-hmm. It's essentially a baked pancake that you cover with powdered sugar, lemon, and butter.
Oh, an Able Skeever. Oh. Yeah, an Able Skeever.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
There's a little town up in over in California called Solvang.
Mm-hmm. And, Dutch.
Yeah. Place. And they make those little Dutch pancakes. They're like little pancake balls.
Yes.
Kind of. And they're called the Abelskivers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last time I was up that way, I was going from L.A. to San Francisco, and we stopped at Hearst Castle. But my dad.
Oh, wow.
Imploring me, take some time, go to Solvang, like get some cheese, you know, do all that stuff. We didn't end up doing it, but it sounded awesome.
My last tour through Europe, we were in Paris, and there's something about like that city has a food thing. Mm-hmm. There's no other way to describe it. When you're walking, like, oh, I can get a fresh made crepe covered in butter and sugar for €2. Yes, I'll take that. I mean, and all over the place, I'll take. Oh, you'll cover a fresh made crepe in Nutella for €1.50. Yes, it's this like explosion of the senses. Like you can sit in Paris and just look around and be drunk.
Yeah,
with what's happening around you.
Meanwhile, Rick, you'll like this. I was telling Jim when we were watching Ratatouille that back in '97 when the only time I've been to Paris, we went and ate at a Chili's, like, just off the Champs-Élysées.
Chili's
like,
off
it was
the
like an alley of the Champs-Élysées. And you go down on the ground, and there's a Chili's, and we ate there.
That is hilarious.
Did you get some baby back?
I probably did, actually.
Chili's! There's some barbecue sauce.
No, but your previous comment about the was it Victor and Albert's?
Yeah, Victoria and Albert.
God damn, am I the only one who knows the history of that?
Why does the restaurant have two daddies?
Queen Victoria and Prince Albert.
Oh, he's just a piercing. no, like, probably the greatest.
You son of a bitch, VJ. You magnificent bastard.
Probably the greatest meal I've had ever was at the California Grill in Disney World. In Orlando. That was it's a 4-star restaurant.
California Grill in Florida.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, Jim, you also have to realize that I've been to, let's see, I was in Prague in the Czech Republic. I went to a Portuguese restaurant, and I ate something called Mexican nachos there.
I will stop. Rick, you want to hear the greatest thing you've ever heard? VJ.
Go for it.
What's the best potato chips you've ever had?
Garlic and butter?
Garlic and butter flavored Lay's in Prague.
No.
Wait, where was
it?
Where
were they? In Bangalore, in India.
Oh, in
If they had garlic and butter flavored potato chips, would you eat anything else?
Oh, God, no.
I would eat the hell out of those if they had them here. God. And I looked. This was 4 years ago.
No, they don't
ago.
Exist.
In America, no, apparently not.
No, no, no.
But they also had weird masala flavored ones, which I steered clear of, because typically I don't like flavored chips.
Well, no.
Well, but you can actually find, like, weird flavored chips over at the British Emporium over here in over by in Grapevine.
They're
oh, but
British.
That's that
they don't
weird
know what food
shit
is.
Where you get,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
Like, lamb
food was imported to Britain in 1987. Like, they're still
where
learning.
You get lamb and mint and roasted ox and shit like that. I know exactly the chips that you're talking about. Yeah. I ate the shit out of them all the way. Like, oh, let's have some, you know, roasted pheasant leg over a bit of rice with herbs. Yeah,
herbs.
That's how they do it. Yeah, that's how they do it over there. Because it's got a fucking H in it, man. A fucking H.
And we've been solving the problems that everyone else seems to be ignoring. Full circle. Bam. Done.
But no, like seriously, Ratatouille reminds you that as you get older, it's what I told Clarkson. You realize you're an adult when you figure out that the size of the burger isn't what makes it good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the taste of that burger that's
exactly,
that makes it good.
Exactly. And Ratatouille hits that home so big.
When I was a kid, it's funny you mentioned that, because when I was a kid, I used to look up to one of my older cousins a lot. And he and his brother, like, they lived in our house when they first came from India. Like, they lived with us for a year or two. I can't remember how long now.
And did they look at you when you ate a burger like you were Hitler?
No, because they would eat him too.
And oh, awesome.
So my older cousin, my oldest cousin, I should say, he would eat two of them, you know? And uh-huh. I until you said that just now, I didn't realize that I started eating two to be like him.
Want to be like you, baby.
Yeah.
Like you!
He's my cousin in San Antonio that I go see all the time, and we go, like,
oh,
flying.
Dude,
have
you guys ever gone to Chris Madrid's?
Uh-uh.
No.
No, fucking take him to Chris Madrid's in San Antonio. VJ, if you go to Chris Madrid's, you will have the burger redefined.
Wow, that good, huh?
Period. Period. You will never have a better burger than what you have at Chris Madrid's.
I just discovered a place.
You should.
I just discovered a place in Fort Worth called. Oh God, what the hell?
Called McDonald's.
Jake's.
Guys, have you ever been there?
No, Jake's. Jake's Burgers.
I don't know Jake's.
And it was a good place to eat. The food was great. The atmosphere was great. The food was not expensive at all.
Yeah.
So, but as far as burgers for me, the be all end all is In-N-Out Burger from California.
Oh, In-N-Out's good shit, but seriously, try Chris Madrid's. It will redefine what that shit means to you.
It has been mentally noted as well for me.
As well, you should, because I'm hard on burgers, man. Like, well, hell, you've heard what I've said about the pancake at the Old South.
Oh, sure.
I mean, shit. Yeah, I need. Next time I'm in Fort Worth, we have to hang out at some point. Well,
definitely.
Shit, by that point, we'll have hung out at least once by the, you know.
Oh, with Alcon.
The
yeah.
Alcon.
No
hell
doubt.
Yeah. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, no doubt.
But, so, we've talked a lot about food.
Yes.
But what we haven't talked about is a film that was originally intended to be completely silent beginning to end.
Really?
WALL-E was intended to be silent. There was not going to be a line of dialogue in that film.
Yeah, no. It was gonna
WALL-E.
It was gonna be. It was gonna be completely robot sounds and body language.
Well, the robot sounds would have worked. I mean, but what I love a lot about that movie is, and I think you're gonna dig this, is if you look at WALL-E versus Eevee.
Mm-hmm.
Eevee is what Apple would have designed WALL-E as.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's that kind of futuristic, really, really cool, ergonomic, but just bad. I mean, seriously, what the hell else is there to say other than it just looks... that's what the future will look like.
Yeah.
And what other country... I mean, what company... has hit that more than Apple.
Yeah, very true.
Shit, look at the iPod. iPhone was the first time they said,
Yeah.
Well, what do you say we do this different? you know, we can do this a little. Why do we have to have that? Yeah, we don't. Shit, you're right.
Yeah.
Now, am I the only person that just Wally just automatically reminds you of ROB from the NES? The robotic operating button.
Oh my god, no, fuck you. Oh no, he's totally wrong. You were not around when that was new, and I went over to my friend Chris's house and we played with it like it was the greatest thing ever. Like, oh, and I looked at it and said, why don't I just hold down the A button for you?
No! No, said, no, it has to spin the thing and put it on the thing.
Like the game, like the fucking power glove that doesn't do anything except keep you from using your left hand on the controller.
I love the power glove. It's so bad.
Keep your power glove off her.
Rick,
did you catch that reference?
Yes, I did.
Thank you. BJ wouldn't because he's too young.
Whoa.
The back movie The Wizard.
Up. I have seen The Wizard several times.
Where
thank
Fred
you.
Savage
yes,
looks
he
at the
says
kid
it's
and
so
said,
bad.
Yeah, you keep your power glove off. This prepubescent girl.
Yeah, they're totally
God, it's terrible. Shit.
Actually, this is not the first time that Disney wanted to do something like this where there was no dialogue. The movie Dinosaurs.
By the way, autism. I just had to say it.
God damn you.
The movie Dinosaur was going to originally have no spoken dialogue at all. It was all going to be dinosaur sounds.
Which could have been cool, but like that's the sort of shit you look at, and like
the 20s
as a film
did it.
School student, you're like, that could be so awesome.
Yeah.
But as a person at a studio, you go, you want to do what?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to release. Are you high on drugs?
But on the plus side with Wally, I have to hand it to Ben Burtt, who was the sound guy for Star Wars, and did all the sound for Wally.
Yeah.
And he was able to get a convincing performance out of a Mac computer with the voice of the co-pilot.
Well, the thing is, if you know how to tell a story,
you
can do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because, again, is Wally powerful because of the power of the animation? No.
No.
If you didn't care about Wally,
yeah.
when he was clinging onto that spaceship and running his hand through the stars, that doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
You cared about him. You were like, oh, my God, that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I will say that is Pixar's take at Mike Judge's Idiocracy.
I have to agree with you there, definitely.
Yeah,
it's sure. And I worked on Idiocracy back when it was called 3001.
Oh, wow.
I was, you've seen
Idiocracy,
right?
So then
Idiocracy,
it sounded
right?
like a freaking Arthur C. Clarke movie.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Because
well,
the
you
third
know that...
book is 3001.
Yeah, yes. Well, Rick, you know the big Secret Service guy who's like, hey, me and the guys want to go family style on her.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That's my friend Randall Reeder. I was his stand-in. I was standing 5 feet away from him when he delivered that line.
Oh, my God.
I was getting paid $100 a day to stay on set, eat food, and pose for the camera for him. That dude, to see how big he is, he's my size. He's 6'8".
Wow.
Yeah, he's massive. But the original ending of Idiocracy had to do with them, like, going on our, like, it, the time machine was a ride. But there was this whole other, like, there was all this other shit where they went to the library, which was the Library of Congress, which was nothing but pornography.
Nice.
Being on that set, you were surrounded with the most horrific pornography imaginable.
Remember, I had Japan
like
on my
these...
hard drive for this episode.
It was all... Exactly. It was like all these empty boxes, but like Buttman magazine, whereas it's just like these asses doing shit they shouldn't, staring at you all day, to where you're like, oh, that's normal. You should be able to crap an entire loaf of bread without feeling it. That's normal.
Did they,
but yeah, that's...
Did they have wait, the, no, did they have the Christmas...
Costco. I love you.
This is a terrible, terrible joke. Did they have the Christmas porn that's called That's Not Eggnog?
No. They haven't.
What?
They did not have that. I don't know what he's talking about, but I think it's best left to the imagination. Wow.
There's another one called God Was I Drunk?
Wow.
That just seems normal.
Yeah, welcome to it.
That's actually a gay porn.
Wow.
Yeah, and the reason why I know that is because in the movie Waiting, in the in the background, in the opening scene, there's a poster for that movie.
Okay.
For a gay porn called God Was I Drunk.
Wow. So is it one of those, like, Christ. Turning fetishes where they get someone who's supposedly straight? Like the soccer practice video, if you've ever seen it.
I haven't seen it.
It's hilarious. It's a music video. I don't know what the hell the group is. It's this guy. Okay, so like the song is called Soccer Practice.
I'm going to make it okay, guys.
Yeah. And this guy, I mean, it's basically this locker room of like, you know, like a soccer football team, right? And this guy struts in with his like entourage, and he's got this like really tight black shirt and rhinestones or whatever. Spelling out gay pimp across his chest, and it's like the song goes something like, "Hey boy, I thought we could go do something dirty." And then there's one part where it's like it shows the guy, and you know he's all muscly. It's, you know, like he's supposed to be straight or whatever. He's like, "Yeah, I'd like to do manly things like lift weights and work out," you know, and just and it's this whole thing. And by the end of the video, they've I guess turned him or whatever. It's like a vampire. But gay. A gay vampire. There's gay sucking vampire. Of something.
Twilight. It's yeah, Twilight.
Something gets sucked.
Just say Twilight.
Blood, talk, whatever.
Wow.
It's pretty hilarious.
How odd is it that I am 8 beers since we started recording this, and yet I feel as though I'm the most suited to pull us back to topic, VJ?
God, was I drunk?
Yes. Shut up. Shut up. No. This is what I love about this show, is it's just wherever the conversation goes.
Oh,
yeah. Whatever happens, happens. You know, that will be all right.
Amazingly enough, I think we've actually been on topic more than off topic.
I know, that's the beauty of it, is we've been recording for 2.5 hours.
I'm out of wine, still, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, and that's what I've always said. The show takes as long as it takes, and if it happens to be 2 episodes, then so be it. But the beauty in Wally coming back from VJ's gay soccer locker room, although I will say 2010 was the year that soccer finally came out of the closet.
You stole that from The Onion, admit it.
I did. What of it, VJ? What? What?
I stole something from The Onion earlier in the podcast. Now it's Rick's turn.
I'll find something.
Yeah, like USG doesn't go like this. Why am I stuck in this nightmare, guys? I have kids. I have children.
I haven't jumped yet.
But no, Wally, the big fatties in the floating chairs.
Mm-hmm.
How brilliant is that? How far away? I will say, if we continue where we're going, 8 years before that's America.
You know, it was
rascals everywhere.
There was a lot of controversy over that.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised.
With the fatties, with the fatties in the chairs and stuff like that, everybody was like bitching about that. And you know, honestly,
NAFTA
I think
especially.
Yeah, I think it was poignant. It was incredibly poignant.
Well, that's why I've started working out more, is because I know that we're like 5 years from that being the truth, mm-hmm. and I want to be a king. And I know that if I keep working out, it'll be that way. Because I had I don't know if you guys heard this, but. As the size that I am right now, I'm like 35% body fat.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means that I have 120 pounds of muscle on my body. Like, I went to the gym today and I did one of those pull downs. It was like chin ups. And I was 6 into it before I realized I was doing 270 pounds.
You know how much I weigh, Jim? You say you've got 120 pounds of muscle?
No, I've got 200 pounds of muscle. 200 even.
200 even pounds of muscle.
Okay. Wow.
I weigh 138 pounds. And I'm I'm overweight saying. Right now.
I'm 230 pounds and I'm overweight. If I lost 50 pounds, I would just be a monster. And I would just be living
monster, for different
I would be living
You'd
in
be
a house made
monster.
Of skulls. I would be living in a house made of skulls of my weaker enemies. Drinking beer from a fucking pelvis. It would be amazing.
How does a pelvis hold liquor?
I would tell it to.
Okay. I mean, I know they've got a little dip in them, but it's like
no,
you
no,
get
no,
a couple
no, no,
laps
no.
out of that.
You've never seen that dip scared. But but no, Wally is the world I dream of, because all I need is a two-handed claymore, and it would be the United States of Dirks and Campbell. Just be us cutting a swath of horror across the heartland of America. It would be amazing.
To crush your enemies, hear them driven before you, hear the lamentations of their women.
Which, if you haven't seen The Robot Chicken, they turn that into like a musical number. And it's pretty awesome.
Yes, they have.
What's the title of this episode going to be? Fuck you, corn dogs are awesome.
Yes, fuck you, corn dogs are awesome.
All right. So, is there anything more that needs to be said about Wally?
Actually,
okay. I'm going to yield because I have to pee and get another beer.
Okay.
Okay. Go for it.
I'm going to let VJ wax philosophical. I'll be right back.
Go for it.
What now? No, so Rick, you mentioned earlier, and I thought the exact same thing about how much like people would complain about the attacking the fatties angle. But one thing I hadn't really realized was a good friend of mine, like she's you know like super conservative and all that, and I talked to her about it. We had been kind of out of touch for a while, and I like left her a voicemail. I was like, "Hey, I just seen Wally. If you haven't seen it, you should go check it out or whatever."
Yeah.
And a little while later, she calls me back and she's like, "Hey, yeah, I saw it," and I was like, "But what?" And we had a coworker, I had a coworker who on my team at work that was just like, for 2 months before the movie came, he was like, "Wally's coming. Wally is coming." Yeah, and made this huge deal about it. Like it was his childhood brought back somehow. It didn't even make sense. I don't know why he was so obsessed. But for Halloween, we saw like Wally costumes online, which amounted to nothing basically more than painted boxes, like cardboard boxes. We tried to convince him to get one, but we couldn't get him to fall for it. But and so my friend, she said she saw it, and she's like, "Yeah, it was a bunch of environmentalist crap." I was like, "Wait, I mean, I get that. Like, I'm not an environmentalist myself at all."
Yeah.
But I was like, "You really are going to let that get in the way of the amazing movie that it was?" Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, it wasn't even – this was not Fern Gully, the robot version.
No, you know, definitely not.
I mean, it had a real message about the environment and about freaking human apathy, which is one of my biggest pet peeves ever.
Yeah, I think what I loved about it with the movie is the establishing shot of Earth in space, and then you start pulling in, and it pulls you into Earth, and then you see it's not the buildings that you see, it's these towers of garbage.
Yeah.
Was that in Wall-E?
Yes,
or,
that's in Wall-E. Yeah. It's such a brilliant intro to the world, and just to show you, this is not the world, this is not the Earth that you're used to. This is not going to be,
because
you know,
when it's pulled way out, it looks perfectly fine.
Exactly.
You know? Mm-hmm. You're not seeing like brown skies or brown oceans or anything like that.
Yeah, and the Down to Earth song by Peter Gabriel is nothing short of amazing.
Peter Gabriel's amazing.
Because Shock the Monkey wouldn't have fit in.
Yeah.
No, it would have been In Your Eyes and then Sledgehammer. How great would I Wanna Be? Ow! Your sledge. I used to hate that video when I was a kid. Now I realize it's brilliant.
But the closing montage during the credits where it shows the humans rebuilding Earth is is amazing. And the song that they play for it is beautiful. And it's really...
Wally is such a hopeful film across the board.
Yes, very much so.
There's no other way to describe it other than it's just like, wow,
good shit can come from but this.
Being
candidate.
The annoying, nitpicky engineer that I am, like that soil is way too toxic. You might get one or two plants out of it, but you're not going to recreate the whole like biosphere you used to have.
Yeah.
Oh, don't be that guy,
Eve's,
BJ.
Eve's mission was pointless. Hold on, let me push my glasses up by the bridge.
Are you using the Steve Martin design glass handle from The Jerk?
I am. What people awesome. Don't know is that I got LASIK, and I don't even need the glasses, but I wear them to look smarter.
Just to punctuate. Boy, what are you trying to say? I say now, boy, what you trying to do there? Now, this is where there is the most impressive jump in both money, profit, everything. And that is Up.
Oh, my God.
I honestly don't know if an opening to a movie... Hope, m'lady, does not like sad movies. She invests herself too much in the characters. Like, I showed her Harold and Maude, and I thought she was going to fucking murder me at the end.
I remember you mentioned that in another episode.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she was so mad.
That's what I'm...
At the end of the credits for this, her staring at me like, you motherfucker.
This Harold and Maude is one of Molly's favorite movies of all time.
Oh, God. She is a quality lady.
Oh, she's very quality.
Yes. But, too good for you, sir.
Oh, indeed.
Best indeed. Get the divorce awesome. Now.
I've been questioning myself for 7 years now. So yeah. It's,
well, though, you know, so but she no. So but, the beginning of Up, though.
Oh man.
Oh.
What other movie has dealt with infertility as delicately and poignantly as this? Kids movie.
There's a shot right
baby
after.
Baby Mama. Oh, I'm sorry.
God damn, BJ. This is why I don't take you to nice places. This is why I won't take you to the Chili's in Austin, even though you're acquainted with Parisian Chili's.
This is why we can't have
Peppa. Jim, we did go to the Chili's in Austin. We went to the Chili's and we wrote, we drew Santa having sex with, I don't remember
cocktail.
Who, on
it
napkins
cocktail,
and passed
yeah.
it between tables and said Christmas was coming early.
Yes, cocktail. I forgot about that. That was the one time we went to Chili's. Which is why we haven't been back, VJ.
We're probably not allowed back.
No, we're not.
So this was because
you let this 16-year-old waitress bring the picture of Santa blowing a guy to me.
There's.
That's why, VJ. Sorry, Rick. Sorry, we had to sully up with this.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay.
But
it's the holiday spirit.
There's a shot, and this was directed by Pete Docter, the same guy that did Monsters Inc. There's a shot right after you see the doctor and Carl Fredrickson.
Where Ellie is sitting in the front yard.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
That is the most devastating bit of film. Oh my God.
And the wind is just. She's just sitting there quietly with the wind going through her hair, and you know...
And her face communicates the absolute, just soul-shattering heartbreak
exactly.
that she went through.
Exactly.
And a kid
exactly.
doesn't have to know what is going on. And there's there doesn't have to be a sad explanation from the parent, like, I didn't want him or her to be exposed to this. It's such a gift. Yeah. It's just, they are sad. Then she dies. And that's enough for the kid to accept. But for the adults who understand what's going on, it's so much more powerful.
That beginning brought me to my knees.
You follow these two characters from the moment they meet to the moment that they part, and it's just so heartbreaking. I watched it last night with the kid. Uh-huh. And oh my God.
And the moment where, and there's no other word, when he loses her.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
It's... Oh. And that then again goes to the Pixar story structure. Mm-hmm. You introduce Carl in this comfortable world where his world is based around his comfort with Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
And then you build it up, and how do you take it away from him? You let nature do what nature's going to do.
Yeah.
Ellie gets old and... She dies.
Yeah.
And I had no...
So and that's what happens.
I mean, I didn't watch this movie until probably July or August of this year. I had no idea it was this good.
The
same friend Rick that I was mentioning, who told me, you know, like, was complaining about Wally, was telling me about Up, and she was like, oh yeah, and there's this talking dog named Doug, and he says, you know, and you are a master, and you are my master, and I love you. And I was like, why has nobody told me there's a talking dog in this movie?
Oh yeah,
now, the in commercials, dog. In commercials, I hate talking animals, and especially chimpanzees. I hate the use, whether or not they talk. I hate the overuse of chimpanzees. It's like get a person, or don't.
Yeah,
but
don't take money out of a fucking equity actor's pocket.
Exactly.
The dog is the funniest freaking thing I've ever seen in a movie.
Doug.
One of my managers said the same line to me at work, and I was like, okay, I signed up for Netflix, and that was the first movie I watched, and I could not believe I'd been well more than a year after it had been released and had not seen it.
You felt deprived, didn't you?
I really did.
Oh,
a year
of Doug, Doug embodies every single point of my statement, dogs are better than cats.
Yes.
Yeah.
When Doug says, I am Doug, I have just met you, and I love you. That's why dogs are awesome, because dogs absolutely love us.
There have been three separate times that Barley has been outside my office door whining at me because my roommate and his fiance are like sitting in the living room watching a movie, and he could just go hang out with them. But he has been sitting outside the office like wanting to play with me.
I have my dog Charlie, who is he hangs out in the room with me when I podcast.
Right.
He is my podcasting buddy. I had to kick him out when I recorded with the Midnight Movie Cowboys because he got a bee in his bonnet and wanted to attack me and wanted to play with me. ended up throwing the printer across the room.
Whoa.
Because dogs are awesome.
With his opposable thumbs.
Pay attention to me, Rick!
Yeah, that's
why I can't have him in the room. I can't have Barley in here.
But yeah, Charlie is, he's my podcasting buddy. He comes in here and he just lays down and squirrel.
Squirrel.
Sorry about
God,
that.
That's
got
the
distracted.
Best thing ever. Rick, how old is your kid?
My kid is 2.
Okay, how long, if you were to take your kid to, you know, a party with a bunch of friends.
Yeah.
If there was a puppy in the room with 100 other people, how long would it take your kid to spot the puppy?
Within seconds.
And how long would it take the puppy to spot your kid?
Probably about 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, if even that long.
Yeah.
I will tell you, puppies love kids.
Yes,
kids
they do.
Love puppies. There is this connection between people and dogs that's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
That is just, and watch on Netflix, Instant, there's Dogs Decoded and the Science of Dogs that goes into the interrelation between human and dogs that shows our evolution is as dependent on the dog as the dog's evolution is on us.
Wow.
I believe it. I totally believe it.
Well, name one other, not nocturnal, but day, awake during the day, carnivore, hunter that lives in packs.
I'm gonna
other than humans and dogs.
Meteor Man.
There's your title for the second episode, Jim. It all comes back to Meteor Man.
It all comes back to Meteor Man. But yeah, man, you look at it, and the minute they meet dog, oh, please let me take you back to my master. Oh, please be my prisoner.
Yeah.
Be my prisoner.
Now, here's please the part that prisoner. Kills about Up. When you go through the Pixar development process, they were on the third version of it when someone said, you know, there needs to be someone other than the old man and the bird.
Really? The kid came in that
they
late
were
in the game?
They were three versions into it before the small mailman.
Wow.
It.
The small mailman.
And that kid, what's funny is there's a guy that I knew through a friend of mine who said that movie was sexist. Because the kid was like, oh, you mean he's a mom? Well, why wouldn't he assume that a dad would have a parental instinct like that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's his relationship with his father?
Yeah.
His father's girlfriend says that it bothers his dad when he calls.
Yeah.
So, no, he doesn't think that a man would have a parental instinct. The first man that he meets who cares about him is Carl.
Yeah.
And what does it take for Carl to care about him?
A hell of a lot.
A hell of a lot. And this way you have all of your clothes and TVs and stuff.
Yeah.
That kid is so great. And that he didn't enter until the fourth version of Five.
And let me just say, as an Asian, finally we have Asian representation in a Pixar film.
Yes, we do.
Oh, did anything ever crush you as much as when he put that grape soda can on him at the end? And it was like, when he put that on the kid at that at the end, I was just like, okay, I thought... Oh my god, that's so amazing.
I'm actually the proud owner of the grape soda bottle cap.
You know, and it's funny because people my age and younger like don't know what a bottle cap is. They've heard the word, but they don't know.
Yeah.
I remember back when pop tops on cans were those things that peeled all the way off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember those, Rick?
Oh god, yes.
Yes. So. And your parents always told you not to put them in the can cuz there was a kid in Kansas who choked to death on one of them.
Yep.
And it was always some kid in another state, but never anyone you'd meet.
Yeah, apparently the first story outline for this movie was Carl just wanting to join his wife up in the sky.
Yeah.
Like almost like a suicide mission.
Uh-huh.
And you know, you see the influence of the Miyazaki films in Up.
Oh God, I told this to Hope. Hope loves Miyazaki. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine now, Rick? I want you to close your eyes and imagine this.
Okay,
if Pixar were to contact Miyazaki and say we're going to develop a picture from ground up with you.
Oh man,
could you imagine Pixar and Miyazaki bringing their forces together to make one movie?
There are two projects I want to see from Pixar badly, and one is a collaboration with Miyazaki. Second would be them taking on Marvel.
Oh, that could be cool.
Now that Disney owns Marvel,
You know, I'd actually want them to wait until Disney acquires Superman.
Oh, that could never. God. That would probably never happen because
Warner Brothers. Well, no, actually, no. Superman is going to be up for auction next year.
That's right, because they didn't.
Yeah,
that's right.
Siegel and Schuster retain it.
Wait, what
company? Oh no,
that's right.
Siegel and Schuster will reclaim Superman as an intellectual property, independent from DC next year.
Yeah, as long as
DC steps in and buys it,
which they probably will.
Could you imagine if Marvel and Superman were owned by the same company?
Dude.
Jesus Christ.
That would be insane.
Oh, yeah. And then bring in Miyazaki to write Superman with Marvel.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm having to hold my tongue until we get to Toy Story to really go into this.
Okay, all right.
But no, Up deserves so much more time.
Yeah.
If you look at internal, external, and philosophical stakes, because that's what what Pixar is really good at. The internal stakes, well, the external stakes is get the house to where Ellie wanted it, where she dreamt of it. Internal stakes is Carl connecting with her again. How can he get back to Ellie? Mm-hmm. Overall philosophical stakes goes back to the beginning. Adventure is out there.
Yeah.
And that's stated from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And how does Ellie pull him back to that?
Well, he goes through, he finds the book.
Thanks for the adventure. Now go out and have your... I can't even say the line without almost choking up with tears.
Thanks for the adventure. Go and have a new one.
Go and have a new one. Oh my God, if that doesn't bring you to tears, then you're not a fucking man.
Oh no, it
that's like the end of Brian's song.
It tore me
up. If that
up.
Doesn't bring you to tears, then no, you're not a man.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with you.
It freaking tore me up. But what I think really brings the movie together is is Michael Giacchino's musical score.
Oh.
And
God.
I'm a huge fan of his music, but this, you know, I love the stuff on The Incredibles, but
this was so sentimental.
It was beautiful.
Without being sentimental.
Yeah.
You know, when you mentioned that, you know, thanks for the adventure, it's an interesting and I think much warranted anti-parallel from Ratatouille, where you find out really early that Gusteau passed away. You know, and so there's not this whole, like, his adventure isn't to find Gusteau and become, like, an understudy to him. You know,
his adventure is to become what Gusteau would want someone who loved Gusteau to be.
Right.
Yeah.
But in Up, the difference is that he is trying to do, you know, something to to memorialize her and doesn't realize that is exactly what she would have wanted. He was doing it more selfishly at first.
Well, and the beauty of it is, do you know what all, and this is me being over in cinema, do you know the only adventure Ellie needed was that mailbox? Their hands in paint touching each other. That's all Ellie needed.
Yeah.
Was knowing that there was that connection between the two of them. God, that kills me because I am a romantic at heart, but also at the same time, like, Campbell and I have one very solid belief that we share when it comes to romance, that love is a choice.
Keep going.
Love isn't something that
totally...
Keep going,
you guys. I'm going to use the restroom real quick.
Okay. Love isn't some shit that totally overpowers you and makes you... Because that's codependency. Love is something
and
where it's like,
fair.
You know what?
Like,
yeah, and movie fair,
movie
exactly.
Fair.
Love is a choice where you say, you know what? I know you. I know your flaws. I know the good things and the bad things about you. You're who I want to be with. That's what it is. Because other than that, if it's some, oh, I don't have a choice, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not love. In Up, it's the purest distillation of what love is. And that is two people who say, you know, you're who I want to be with. You're who I want to share this adventure with. And that's what melts me at the end of Up.
And especially because, you know, at the beginning, he's intimidated by her.
Oh, yeah.
So he's scared of her. The way love should be, scary.
Yeah, exactly. But by the end of... Yeah, at first, love is scary. But then when you get used to it, it's the two chairs next to each other in the lounge.
Right, or those two bathtubs on the beach in a Cialis commercial for some reason.
Exactly, yes. The Bona pills. But, like, seriously, VJ, if you were to think, what is your definition of love? And is Rick back?
I don't think so. No, that.
I think Rick's taking a fucking fierce nump. Because did you hear that,
no, that
too?
Was me.
Or is
that
it just me?
Sorry.
Okay, that was just you? Okay, we'll just grab that to him.
I'm back, you guys.
All right, Rick. All right, here's VJ just hit his mic, and I thought that you were taking a dump that ripped a hole through time and space.
Barry Sanders style.
But here's the question I was asking VJ. I think that all those movies that paint love as this, oh, it's this force I can't control, blah, that's codependence.
Yeah.
Love is this choice where it's like, to me, the Fredrickson living room with Carl's chair next to Ellie, that's what love is.
Oh, yeah.
You're the person that when I'm reading my magazine when I'm 80, I want to put my hand over and feel your hand under it and say, yeah, this is where I want
to
be.
I hate to say it, but there's a line from Lethal Weapon 4 that... No. Lethal Weapon
what?
3. Sorry, Lethal Weapon 3. Where he says... where Rick says to Rene Russo, he says, you grow old with someone. You don't grow old because of someone.
Yes.
And
that's perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
well, and Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
Has a line along that. Like, I love you, Maude. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Now go out and love some more.
Yeah, and it's
my God.
And you can't just convince yourself. You have to convince the other person. Or rather, they have to convince themselves.
Yeah.
Up is, to me, the most perfect love story. But then when you get to the end of it, what does Carl do? He forms this relationship with the kid where it's like, yeah, I am gonna find more adventures right here with this kid that you
and he lets the
Ellie,
house go.
He let the
he
house go.
He briefly had it where he wanted it. He doesn't realize it even goes back to where it should have been.
Exactly. He doesn't even realize that it's there. But then he comes back and it's like, no, Ellie, me and this kid, we're going to have ice cream. We're going to take Doug for walks. And that's going to be my new adventure, is me and this kid. And that... I don't think there's ever been a more beautiful ending to a movie.
Yeah. There's
than
a,
Up.
There's a story that's that's attached to Up. I guess there was a little girl, 10-year-old girl, who was suffering from end-stage terminal vascular cancer. God. And her, this is going to break your hearts, guys. I'm warning you ahead of time. For those listening,
anything about kids kills me.
Bust out the,
and I'll tell you more in a second.
Yeah, bust out the Kleenex, people, because this one's going to break your heart. She was in end stage vascular cancer, and then her dying wish was to live to see Up.
Oh my God!
And her condition was so debilitating and so deteriorating, she couldn't leave the house. So a family friend...
And let me guess, John Lasseter had an IMAX theater built in her room to see every aspect of that film as it was made.
Not quite. A family
but
friend...
But he would have.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have. A family friend contacted Pixar. They arranged a private screening. An employee flew to Huntington Beach to her house with a bunch of toys and a DVD copy of the movie. She was so in a bad spot that she couldn't open her eyes, and the mom had to describe the movie to her scene by scene.
Oh my God!
She passed away 7 hours after the movie ended.
Why are you telling me this?
Oh my God!
Yeah, it was like a heartbreaking story, and that's.
But no, at the same time, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's the power of these characters, the power of what Pixar does in these movies, the resonance that these characters do,
and that you have a situation where a mother can describe that to her child.
Yeah.
Which is why, if you look at it, before Up came out, Finding Nemo, $867 million. Mm-hmm. Up made $731.
Wow.
Which, for a movie with the weight that Up had, I mean, Up shouldn't have made money. And I'm going to... People don't react to that level of emotional weight.
Well, also the fact that the protagonist is an old man.
A kind of fuck you old man.
Yeah.
Like Gran Torino style.
Exactly. Yeah, fuck
Which
you, you
pussy.
Which,
incidentally, is a movie that made me cry like a baby at the end.
Oh, it did. Me too. And I will stand by this. I'm going to be Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino when I get old. And I stand by it. He's not a racist at all.
I still need to see that movie.
He hates anyone he doesn't know.
I won't say anything to spoil it, but I actually cried more because of the dog than anything else.
Oh, yeah. Rick, and I think you'll agree with me by the end of it. He seems like a racist, but the fact that, like, once he gets to know you, like, no, you're not an Asian, you're my neighbor. Fuck you, you're going to mess with my neighbor? That's what it is.
That's awesome.
It's
I can't
brilliant.
Wait.
It's amazing. Now, you need to watch it.
I will. I definitely will. And, you know, to bring in a little bit of humor here, apparently Doug was awarded the Palm Dog Award by the British Film Critics for Best Canine
As
Performance.
As he should.
Get
for
this.
Best what?
For Best Canine Performance at Cannes. He beat the fox from Antichrist and the black poodle from Inglourious Basterds.
I will say my Doug... To me, if there's ever an award for a dog, Doug deserves it.
No doubt.
Oh, please let me take you to my master. Oh, please.
I do not like the cone of shame.
No. The dead squirrel joke. Holy
squirrel.
Shit.
Oh, yeah.
The dead squirrel joke where he's like, I know a joke. The squirrel said, I cannot. I have run out of food to hide for the winter, and so I shall die. The joke is funny because the squirrel died.
Yes.
Oh, man.
So
Now, you know what's amazing to me when it comes to Pixar stuff? Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
$867 million is Pixar's biggest. Toy Story beats it by $200 million.
Good. God. Okay, before we get to Toy Story 3.
Yes.
We have to mention, in every Pixar film, there's a nod to the next movie in some way, shape, or form. And
right.
Up, you see Lotso Huggin' Bear in a kid's room as the house is being taken up by the balloons.
Really?
Wow. Lotso is, to me, the greatest film villain ever.
Lotso's a fucking bastard. Okay, I saw the trailer for this movie, and as soon as I saw the bear with the cane, I'm like, fuck it, he's the bad guy.
Yeah, he's got to be the bad
guy.
Now, here's where I have got in front of me right now. We're going to go through 10/23/2010.
Yeah.
Day 3 Austin Film Austin Film Festival. Mm-hmm. Panel number 7, Toy Story 3 by Michael Arnott. I have got in my hand, step by step, how this movie was put together.
Wow.
Which is why we've put this into its own episode. Mm-hmm. Because right now, if we were to run this on its own, we would be... Oh, don't tell me it stopped. Okay. We'd be damn near 3 hours in.
We're about to hit the 3-hour mark right now, yeah.
Yeah. And now here we've got Toy Story 3. Now, it was 3 years writing the finished version of this script. This whole thing finished 365 days to the day before it was released.
Here's the thing with Toy Story 3. Or the original story... as being pitched by Michael Eisner and wasn't going to be animated by Pixar at all. It was going to be done by Circle 7 Studios, which a lot of people in Hollywood jokingly refer to as the seventh circle of hell.
Right.
But no, Circle 7 was because of the address that it was on. But the original storyline involved Buzz being recalled to Japan.
Wow.
And, or rather, not Japan, Taiwan, and Woody and the gang going to go rescue him.
Uh-huh.
Thankfully,
okay.
That didn't make it past concept.
Oh, God, no.
Once Pixar got bought by Disney and John Lasseter took over the animation, he said, scrap everything you've got going on for Toy Story 3. We've had a story in mind for years. Let's go ahead and do that instead.
Now, what I've got right in my hands right now, hold on. 11 pages of notes that I took while Michael Arnott, Academy Award-winning screenwriter of Little Miss Sunshine, talked about this movie.
Wow.
Now, there are three ideas that had to happen in this movie. Now, we are going to heavy spoilers for Toy Story 3 if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Three ideas. First off,
if you are listening to the show and you have not seen Toy Story 3,
hit stop right now.
And go watch the damn movie. Watch it on Blu-ray because it looks spectacular on Blu-ray.
Yes, and then come back and watch it.
Yes.
Now, here are the three ideas. First off, real-time passage.
Mm-hmm.
Andy had to be old enough to go to college.
Indeed.
Two, daycare, heaven into hell.
Oh okay. God.
Three, ending, the toys had to be given to Bonnie. There was a 20-page outline that had to fit those three ideas.
Wow.
Now, let's look at the trial and error of it. Now, the moments, the tentpole moments.
Mm-hmm.
First non-Pixar, I was with the first non-Pixar people to see the crappy early stuff.
Yeah.
Where you had to trust the process. Page 1 was intro. Inciting incident was within page 10. First act break, 25. Midpoint, 50. Second act break, 75. Climax, 90.
Wow.
Now, let's look at intro. Establish character and setting. Establish relationship, backstory, all that. Now, the way they had it set up was the toys having a conversation when they overheard them talking about Andy going to college. Buzz was the optimist, saying, oh, everything will be all right. All the other toys were talking about, oh, we're going to end up in the attic. Mr. Potato Head was the voice saying, we're going to end up in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Uncertain was Woody saying, no, Andy's going to take us with us. He's going to take us with him.
Mm-hmm.
What the verdict was it's a bunch of people standing around talking. There's too much exposition. College is too ideal. Woody knows too much. The attic, all the toys have had 10 years to talk about this. It's retirement. They know about it.
Yeah.
Garbage is too horrible. We're not a bunch of talking stuff. We know that something more is going to happen. So, the expectation is certain. Attic, there's not subject to doubt, there's specific, but there's a clear vision. Okay, we're going to end up in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to end up being thrown away. All we want is to be tied to what? All we want to be is tied to Andy. 10 pages in, there's an inciting incident that disrupts the plans, changes the sense of self, and changes the world.
Mm-hmm.
Woody can't overhear it. He sounds whiny. You have to know for sure. You have to know we're planning on going into the attic, and then something is going to disrupt that. Then there has to be an accident that makes the kids makes the toys think they're going into the attic. What's that accident? Andy's taking them up to the attic, drops the bag to help his sister.
Mm-hmm.
He's going downstairs. Mom comes up and sees a garbage bag filled with what? The toys.
But she doesn't realize it's toys yet.
Yeah, it's a bag of garbage.
Yeah.
So she takes it down. Now we flash back to Toy Story 2. His arm gets ripped. It's visceral. He thinks he's going to be thrown away. We go to the action set piece where Woody rescues Wheezy, but ends up with him being put in that basket where the worst possible thing happens. It's a flashback. Accidentally, the worst thing imaginable happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then, unforeseen, nobody is getting thrown out, but the toys are in the bag. Narrow escape, worst possible fear of getting thrown out, best possible Woody's going to college. Unforeseen, the toys end up going to the what's it called? The daycare. Now, first act break, Woody ends up going with them to the daycare originally.
Mm-hmm.
And Woody sees all the shit that they go through, but then leaves. Now, how does that change Woody as a character? If Woody knows, oh my God, they're going to end up in this awful place. They're not going to, and I'm going to leave them.
Mm-hmm.
What does that make Woody? I'm going to leave you guys here now that I know what your treatment's going to be.
Yeah.
Like, it showed Woody getting played with, Woody being used as a hammer to hammer in those things instead of Buzz. And he looks over and sees Lotso wink at him.
Oh,
Woody!
Really?
All of a sudden, is a band that the second draft of the script had Woody as one of the toys that gets played with by the kids.
Really? Oh, wow.
And then abandons all of them. What does that make Woody?
That makes him the asshole.
It makes him an unbelievable asshole.
Yeah.
Yes, and but yet Woody wouldn't leave. Toys at Sunnyside. Woody meets Losto. Woody is passive. Then he leaves. Now, the second act goal becomes getting back to him because Andy still needs him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the midpoint...
But they're not convinced he does.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They're not at all. Because they think it's going to be great. They get stuck in all this stuff. The toys are helpless. Now,
and they thought he didn't want them.
I'm going to read something to you here. They find out Andy wants them. Let's look at midpoint. Andy didn't mean to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at some reversals. Reversals. Andy, he didn't mean for the toys to be thrown out. That was accidental. Lotso, great guy, turns out to be a bad guy. Buzz is there to fix things. No, it gets reversed. He's the guard for the bad mm-hmm. guys. Barbie and Ken were together. They break up. Sunnyside, best place ever, turns into a prison. Woody learns Lotso. It's a bad guy, has to save him. All that happens within 3 minutes.
Wow.
Are you serious?
All of that happens in less than 3 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they find out that Andy didn't mean to throw him out. Lotso turns into a bad guy. Buzz becomes a guard. Barbie and Ken break up. Sunnyside turns into a prison. Woody comes back to save him within 3 minutes. New direction, new obstacles, reversal. All of it simultaneously. There's no treading water.
And Jack Bauer says, God damn it!
God damn it! Initially, there was going to be a lot of time at that scene, but there wasn't. Now, Act 2. Out of the frying pan, into the fire. We succeed in Act 2 goal, but there's a setback in general goal. Now, let's look at it. In Star Wars, it's like they locate, you know, the bad guys locate the rebel base, all that, blah, blah, blah. In Little Miss Sunshine, Olive registers, but she's out of her league. She has to win or lose at this point. At this point, it's like, okay, what are we going to do with the toys? Now, Woody stayed. And there was this whole moment where they're on the garbage thing, where they're about to get dumped into the garbage, where Woody goes back to save them, where Woody makes that impassioned speech to Lotso.
Mm-hmm.
no, we're here for the kids, and blah. And Lotso turns around, no, they don't love you, you're a toy, blah, blah, blah. In the original version, Lotso is sitting there while Woody fires off this whole thing. No, we're here for the kids, and the kids love us. The original version had the baby doll pick Lotso up and throw him into the garbage.
Which is what happens in the movie already.
No, it doesn't.
No, but yes, it's a dumpster.
In the dumpster, that doesn't happen.
Oh, okay.
And now here's the thing. The philosophical question is a child's love for his toy real? Lotso says, no, it's not. You're a piece of plastic that can be replaced. Woody says, yes, it is real. Whose philosophical point is proven correct at the end of that scene?
Woody's.
No.
No?
Lotso's is. Because Lotso says you could be thrown away, and who ends up in the trash? They don't help him out.
Yeah.
Had the baby picked Lotso up, here's what Michael Arnett said. If they had thrown the Lotso in, that means Woody was right.
Mm-hmm.
Which means Woody wins, which means Woody's always right, which means Woody is boring because there's no doubt in the philosophical, which means there's no choice or no challenge in the story, which means that your story is boring.
Mm-hmm.
In one shot.
Yeah.
If Lotso is correct, what does that mean for your story? That means Woody's not right.
Mm-hmm.
That means Woody's question is uncertain, which makes Woody interesting, which makes your philosophical question in doubt, which means your challenge has meaning and your story is no longer boring.
That makes your lead character fallible.
Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, this, and we're at page 3 of my Michael Arnett shit.
I mean, here's the thing, you know, as a dad, I see Oliver with his little stuffed bear that he has named Sam, and the love for that bear it's unconditional.
Yes, it is.
He takes that bear, and when I give it to him, he takes it from me, and he gives it the biggest friggin' hug that he could possibly give it.
It's like my guys,
you know. I mean, Sam is Oliver's world.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, it's absolutely unconditional. But yeah, this is fascinating stuff, though.
Does it ever make you wonder where that comes from? I mean, like when I was a kid, I know I had 2 or 3 toys like that, but it's hard to look back and figure out why you love the toy so much. You just did.
I have the stuffed lion that my mom got me as a replacement for the stuffed Ewok that she fried in the dryer. Thanks, Mom.
Wow.
And
is this turning into Jerry Springer? Because that's not why.
No. I've guilted her about this so much in life. Oh yeah. You know, Mom, if you had it fried wicked in the dryer.
Awesome.
Yeah. So. She got me this stuffed lion, and I still have that dopey looking lion. I still have him, and I have him in my collection room. He's just sitting there, he's enjoying his retirement. So,
right on.
But yeah,
but
it's interesting you say that. My favorite stuffed animal as a kid was also a stuffed lion.
Oh, right on.
My dad, I guess, named it Nittany, like after the Penn State Nittany Lions. No, I knew
it. As a testament to your failure.
Right. And
as a testament to your repeatedly letting him down, VJ.
Hey, my brother went to Penn. That's close enough.
Yeah, that's great.
So this year for Halloween, my costume was a lion tamer. And I was like, ooh.
I remember that. And there was that hot broad at the party.
That's true. Yes, there was. And I thought, well, you know, shit, I'll need a lion for that. And short of putting a mane on my dog, which would have been awesome, but he would have been freaked out by a Halloween party, you know, I thought about using this same old lion for that, and I was like, God, no. I don't want to take it to a party. I don't want people to spill a drink on it or get it dirty or anything like that. And it turns out, like, 4 years ago, I won a freaking, like, little tiny stuffed lion from a crane game.
Mm-hmm.
At something, you know, and like I took that. I was like, I don't care what the hell happens to this thing, you know. It doesn't have that same sentimental value. Yes, they're both stuffed lions, but obviously one carries way more weight than the other.
I mean,
And that's true. Like, a toy is worth what emotional weight you bring to it.
And you see the moment in Toy Story 3 where Andy makes a decision between Buzz and Woody, who is going in the attic, who's going to college. And he makes the decision to take Woody with him to college. And then you see...
Well, now...
And it resonates with you because it goes, huh, so Woody always was the favorite.
But here's the beauty of it. When it hits the climax, you hit that Andy's not a child anymore.
Yeah.
And so that whole, let's look at second act break. If your kid loves you so much, why is he leaving? Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at Woody's idea. Woody's idea is it's not about being played with. It's about being there for them. Mm-hmm. Love means being there. Lotso says you're being replaced. You were never loved. Andy is leaving. That means Lotso's right. Mm-hmm. But then there's some new information. Where does Woody's new information come from?
The tabloids. I got this.
Yes. But let's look at the end of this movie. What brings Woody's epiphany on? Who has the line? Mom says to Andy, "Oh, I wish I could always be there for you." What does Andy say? "Oh, Mom, you always will be." Who does Woody learn the lesson from?
From his
Andy. "I wish I could always be there for you, Andy. I always will be." So what does Woody make the choice at the end? Do I go with him to college? No. I make a note that says, leave me with him.
Yeah.
Leave me with the little girl. So, I wish I could always be there. You always will be.
And it was nice to do it kind of the same way that Juno did it. You know, like, you don't know what the note says until it gets read after the
character. Yeah, until you leave your child like it means nothing.
Yeah, the audience knows after the characters do, which is a rare thing.
Did you mention Juno just to piss me off?
I kind of did.
Okay, good. Just so long as you weren't doing it all blind, like, what, Jim, what? What? Why would you be upset by
I know
that?
It's your favorite movie. But yeah, it's the best Ellen Page movie you've ever seen.
No, it's not.
Hard candy-ish.
Inception is.
Oh, yeah, Inception,
no,
yeah.
You know, funny story, Rick, is actually, like, I saw Inception one day, and then the very next day is when Jim and I went to go see Toy Story 3. Mm-hmm. And I came out of that movie like, I really don't know which one of those movies I liked more. And as time has passed, it's been Toy Story 3.
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a better embodiment of hell than in Toy Story 3?
Oh, God.
I honestly, if I'm being pushed for it, no, there has not ever been a better embodiment of hell.
Dude, they get to the junkyard, and what caught me off guard and was really the game changer for me was where you see the aliens hop off for the claw, and then Woody's like screaming after them, "We have to stay together," and then all of a sudden this fucking truck comes and just plows them.
Well, now here's the beauty of it. When we talk about the field trips that they take, they went to a junkyard and they were like, okay, how do they get out of that? Make a list of what's around us. And then we're like, well, we got this, or we got a claw. We got what? Oh, we got the claw.
The claw.
Done. That's
how
they get out. And
that's,
they didn't realize it until they started making a list of the shit that was there.
Crazy.
Now,
that's brilliant.
This brings me to the Miyazaki thing. What character pops up in the little girl's room?
Oh, Totoro.
Totoro. How great would a fucking Pixar Totoro movie be?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Oh my God, it'd be all over. Totoro, Totoro.
I need to see the actual movie itself. I need to see My Neighbor Totoro.
You haven't seen it?
I have yet to see it.
Oh my God, it's amazing. Hope made me watch it, and it has the most precious thing ever. When the little sister goes to school, that's all I'll say. It's a step forward and a hug, and it's the most precious thing you'll ever see in your life.
Okay,
but that's the moment when I saw Totoro there, like, oh my God, how great would it be if Pixar did a movie with Miyazaki?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God, that would be incredible.
But yeah, I mean, the whole junkyard scene.
Oh God,
the kid started crying when they end. Well, the kids.
Oh yeah, Alvice and I were like, "Oh my god!" Well, oh my god!
That,
what?
Like, during the whole Prison Break, which I love the number of homages to other movies.
Oh god,
oh,
yes.
Oh god, yeah.
But you know, during that, you're yes. so sure they got off scot-free. That's the conclusion of the movie, and you're done. You're so sure.
And then there you are. And the thing is, with the magnet, with the shit flying up, that's real.
Yeah.
That's actual. And they were like, how surreal is that?
That is, yeah.
And how Lotso ends up in hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he fucking belongs.
Well, the crazy thing is that when they end up in the dump truck, okay, in the garbage truck, the kid freaked out.
God.
Because Buzz got, Buzz and Jesse were separated. And he flipped out. The kid just started screaming. And
well, yeah.
And Molly had to take him out of the theater. And me, I'm just, you know, it's Father's Day. I'm sitting there alone. Molly's on the fucking side of the theater consoling the kid. I'm in tears. Okay? It's like, fuck Dad. The kid's more important. But, you know, Dad, on the other
hand. So it's like the worst Father's Day since I beat my dad up at the golf course.
Dude, I was
at golf or
it.
Just beat him up?
Just be for the fuck of it.
I have.
Hey, I'm human.
But yeah, I like.
God, yeah, hell.
It
yeah.
was a total mind fuck of a movie. Oh my god.
Yeah, it was ballsy as hell.
Oh, it was dark as.
How
it
like
was
how
dark.
Many like Vijay? How Vijay? How many times you're watching that? Were you and I like what?
What the hell? No predicting that movie. There was no. We just mentioned there was so much telegraphing in that. There was. I thought for sure once they made it out of the daycare, they were done, and hey, they get to all join Andy at college.
My jaw was on the floor from the moment that Lotso pulls Woody into the dumpster to the point where the aliens save them with the claw.
Yeah,
my jaw was on the floor.
There is no way out of this.
Yeah, I mean, talk about the worst situation imaginable. Yeah. I mean, wow, good God.
Because, I mean, yeah, they're toys that have come to life, but their physical abilities are so limited. How can you, like, match this juggernaut of the conveyor belt, the shredders, and the freaking melter?
Okay, and did you guys freak out when they're sliding towards the melter and they're all holding hands?
Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
I mean,
they've accepted it before we accept it.
Yes. Yes. You know what? I never thought of it like that, VJ. Wow. I mean, you're right. They accepted their fate before we could even think of accepting that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Jim. Didn't mean to. Jim. Did we lose Jim?
How could we lose Jim?
Did we lose?
He didn't say anything.
He probably just left us to our own devices and went to go take a leak.
Well, we can keep talking anyway because he can always edit
God,
it
yeah.
in. Yeah. No, I just did the...
What?
Oh, you back?
I am.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing that throws me with... Especially into Toy Story 3 when I know the shit that went into the story. The number of people who think they can write a movie without discussing it with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Without showing anyone, here's what I did, blah, like... Wait, no. You gotta let someone else see what you're doing to find out whether you're doing it right or not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And like with Pixar, apparently what happens is they'll sit around and talk about it and trade off and one-up each other. And you have jokes that come out just from the screening process.
Yeah.
And the idea of, oh, no, I wrote it. I'm just going to say, well, let someone else read it. Oh, no, I'm too scared to. Well, then you're not a good writer.
People living in a vacuum.
Exactly.
It reminded me when I did creative writing at UT, and I had this story. This girl was like, oh, yeah, you know, I thought that part was great. It's like, yeah, I had a lot of friends. And they're, what, you let your friends read your stories? I was like, what, you don't?
Are you kidding me? I was like trying to like shove my stories into the hands of anybody who would want to read it.
Yeah, you'll read this. Read it. Read this. Tell me what's wrong.
Yeah,
I can.
That's
see,
where
like,
you learn.
I can see myself not doing that, just expecting that people will always butter it up for me. You know, like sugarcoat it.
Right. Yeah, but you'd be amazed if you really push it and say, "Tell me what's wrong." Which Michael Arnett?
Mm-hmm.
You know that there were 100 different rewrites on Little Miss Sunshine.
Wow.
They weren't 101. They weren't 100-page rewrites, but he'd hand it to someone and say, "Well, here, here's a questionnaire. Huh. What doesn't work? What works here? What blah blah blah?" And he'd rewrite based off that.
Wow.
Where it's not like a, "Oh, I didn't like that." Like, okay, what didn't work?
Wow.
Okay, this character didn't. All right, cool. Well, how can we make him work?
And it's funny how often, like in a movie that is otherwise, the writing is good, you know, the effects mm-hmm. or whatever is good, that the pacing right. is so off. But now you've shown us that, well, Pixar always uses basically the exact same pacing. And it's funny
exactly.
how amazingly consistent that formula stays true to where you still are engaged the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be...
Pixar, figure it out.
I'm going to be very curious to see what they do with Cars 2 because...
Yeah. Cars 2, well, their next three, Cars 2, Monsters Incorporated 2.
And Brave.
And Brave.
Yeah.
Brave is the one I'm most interested in because that's their first stab at creating a fairy tale from nothing.
That's going to be incredible.
Have you guys seen The Secret of Kells? No.
I have not. I heard it was very good.
It's amazing.
Wow.
It's like anime. Well, and I'm Irish as a motherfucker. Mm-hmm. I'm all about the Irish, Scottish. Well, I'm more Scottish than Irish, but I'm all about that. It is like an animated version of the Book of Kells with the stories that go behind that.
Wow.
Where you've got like this, you know, moving Celtic knotwork and, oh, it's great. It is, oh, I love that shit.
We'll have to sit down and watch it then.
Exactly. Exactly. But seriously, Pixar, the more that I look at it, it's the only studio that has it right. Their idea is, we could release 100 movies this year,
mm-hmm.
or we could release one really good and make the same amount of money.
Yeah.
And instead of being known as the company that puts out Night and Day, we could be the company that puts out Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
And make it really work. And the rules for Toy Story 3 were Andy had to be too old for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, God, when he gives the little girl those toys and pulls Woody back for that second.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then said, wait a minute, if I take him with me, he's going to sit on a shelf and do nothing. Mm-hmm. If I hand him to this little girl. This little girl is going to have a million adventures with this toy.
And you she could already had. He just didn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you could already see with how she was playing.
Timothy
with
Dalton as Mr. Picklepants.
Oh my
Mr.
God,
Pricklepants.
Yes.
The serious.
Do you have any? Do you have any training?
It reminds me of. Do you remember that old Sprite commercial where it showed those like it's like these basketball players, and they're all sitting there on the one of the street hoops courts, you know. And
uh-huh.
they're like, yeah, and they're holding up a soda to the camera, and they're like, yeah, you drink this, and then they're like, cut, you're holding the can
cut.
Upside down, and it's like, I don't need this, I played Hamlet at Cambridge, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Prickle pants.
But yeah, that hits it, like, to me, I think if there were to be a quintessential Pixar movie, it's Toy Story 3.
It
hits everything. As much as I love Up, and seriously, as I like Hurt Locker, had Hurt Locker lost Best Picture to Up, I'd have been fine with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, I think Best Picture and Best Director are going to go to Social Network.
My money's on True Grit, but I'll
see. True Grit, I kind of am with, mm-hmm. but we're talking David Fincher. And
Aaron Sorkin, yeah.
Aaron Sorkin together, I think that's going to carry it.
Yeah.
But right now, with the fact that you're going to be looking at for Best Picture, Inception, True Grit,
mm-hmm.
Toy Story 3, Social Network, The Town, and five others,
mm-hmm.
anything could take Best Picture.
Yeah. Really.
I like if they continue with the 10 nominees,
which I kind of hope they don't.
I really do too. Because seriously, I named five there.
Yeah.
True Grit, Inception, The Town, Social Network, and Toy Story 3. Can you name any movies that are from a production directorial standpoint, more deserving?
Meteor Man.
And that's why it all comes Leonard back to part, Meteor Man.
Leonard Part 6. Fuck you, Corn Dogs.
Fuck you, Corn Dogs are awesome.
They are awesome.
God, man. Well, honestly, we're about to hit the 3.5 hour point, and yeah. It's going to be 2 episodes. I'm going to tell you that right now. But is there anything more that we can say about Pixar at this point?
I think at this point, no.
Yeah.
And the reason being is because USG has a Pixar episode that's still in the hat, and we did.
And I'm going to be part of that.
Yeah.
I hope.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. After this point, you're like, can we do it without Jim?
Oh,
said
no.
All the funny things. Yeah.
I wouldn't dream of not having you on here.
And I'll even be sober for years. Yeah, right now I am a little bit beyond drunk at this point.
So
I'm not going to lie.
But
this was awesome, and I think we're about to hit the end of the record moment.
Definitely.
But thank you, and anybody who doesn't know, like, who thinks we've missed something in this massive undertaking, we're at thefilmthugs@gmail.com, thefilmthugs on MySpace. No, we're not. The Film Thugs on Facebook. I'm still being relevant here. I'm sorry.
Is there any
going a little retro? We're also on Friendster.
Web crawler. Use web crawler.
Web crawler. Yeah. You can use Netflix to send me a JPEG somewhere. But
RAM all the gigabytes.
That's right.
So the Film Thugs at Gmail. All that. Check out Rick's over at the Join the USG. We're join the USG at Gmail. USG.
Join the USG at yahoo.com. We're also on Twitter at join the USG, and we're on Facebook under United States of Geekdom, and you can visit our website at www.unitedstatesofgeekdom.com.
It's awesome. If you like this show at all, you want everything they have to offer.
Yes.
But I'm also going to wager, if you're listening to this, there's a greater chance that you found us through them than that you'll find them through us. I think that's a good choice. And VJ has nothing to offer other than his wit.
Oh,
it pays the bills.
I'm not going to argue.
VJ,
well, that too.
VJ, we're going to have to get you on the show. We're going to have to get you on USG at some point.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yes. Right on.
And you are right on. Well, how about we stop the recording on the Film Thugs?
You got it.
And say thank you all for joining.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. It's been
and good
great.
Night. Say something funny, VJ.
Oh, I don't have anything, but we could talk about manteca or lard and tortillas some more.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that. Good night.
Night, y'all.
All right, well, thanks for sticking with us through our totally unnecessary cliffhanger ending. Musically on this, I'm following the exact same pattern as last time, using Top of the Morning to You by House of Pain at the beginning. Right now, you're hearing the Pixies' Wave of Mutilation. Both great artists, both good albums. Get them. Get them. It's from Fine Malt Lyrics and Doolittle by the Pixies. So, clip-wise, it's all Up, Toy Story 3, and WALL-E. So thanks for listening. Join us next time. Who knows what you're going to hear, but it'll be awesome. Take care.
That's it. Please stay for the end credits. If you're wondering who the best boy is, it's someone's nephew. Don't forget to validate your parking. And for all of you good people in the Midwest, I'm sorry we said fuck so much. Say goodnight.
Thanks again.
Now go. Vanish.
Spread it on!